Oh, I'm all out of. I mean, we had two very big weeks, so I took a mental vacation from the show, so I don't know what I'm doing anymore.
I also, well,
you took an actual vacation.
I mean, yes, but it's one of those things where if you have like a weekend trip where you have to travel somewhere and then back again, how it basically doesn't feel like you had a weekend because traveling and stuff. Not that I didn't like the flight delays at the Las Vegas airport.
Yeah, why did you decide to go to Las Vegas?
It's a long story, but
it wasn't your decision, was it?
Well, not really. Jason has a very good friend, and this very good friend knew how much Jason likes Celine, and Celine Dion performs in Las Vegas, and arranged for tickets, and so then we went, and we did it this weekend because it was supposed to be like a combination birthday Christmas present for him, and his birthday is not till the end of the month, and we're going to Maui for that, starting next Tuesday to the Tuesday after. So,
fancy. Wait, yeah. Is Matt Alexander still going to be there?
I didn't know he was there, but
I think he left today for his honeymoon.
Oh, that's weird. Probably not. Well, Casey was in Las Vegas, and I didn't meet Casey List there.
I was going to say there were a lot of notable internet nerds in Las Vegas when you were there. I think Gruber and Marco were there too.
No, that was before the weekend before.
I'm pretty sure he at least stuck around, or maybe he was just Instagramming photos late, but I think he stuck around or something.
Oh, well.
Anyway.
I probably would not have run into him.
Why didn't you go meet
Dion performance?
Probably not. Why didn't you go meet Casey for a deluxe foot-long chili dog over at Guy's Place?
Because it takes like 30 to 40 minutes to go anywhere on the strip because of taxis and going up and down buildings and stuff. So I couldn't
30 whole minutes, man.
No, but I couldn't arrange a time where I could travel, you know, basically for like an hour round trip to go somewhere and come back, because we had so little time, because, Jason and my friend, also accompanied us, and we went into like the Neon Museum and stuff like that, where you see all the old casino signs and things that have been taken down. That was neat. Our tour guide was, Mitch. Mitch was
who?
A good tour guide.
Mitch the tour guide?
Yeah, Mitch Cohen.
Mitch Cohen?
Yeah.
No,
he
I know
used
Mitch,
to be
no,
a DA back, or was it an assistant DA back in Boston?
Well, you don't get to be the head DA with a name like Mitch. I think that's only assistant territory.
Mm. Well, yeah, that he excelled at being a tour guide for signs.
how did Celine do? Did she excel at being Celine?
Well, yes. I mean, I'm not really a Celine Dion fan per se. I find it just like a little sappy and schmaltzy and stuff. But as far as like a live performance goes, like she can sing, she can belt it out, she can put on a good show.
I'm pretty sure it's known that she's able to sing.
Yeah, I mean, a couple people probably have noticed this before, so I don't want to like throw off other people that have not also come to this realization. I don't want to spoil it for other people, but she has potentially sung things in the past, and she did so on this occasion. And she does the whole thing up there on the stage, and there's lights and screens and curtains and costume changes, and it is a whole production, almost like it was some sort of planned event. And then at the end of it, she did a cover of The Show Must Go On, which is a Queen song that I really love, and she did a very good version of it. I have nothing negative to say about that. It was very nice. The whole experience was very nice. Surprisingly so. I mean, you just have to get over the fact that you're admitting that you liked being at a Celine Dion performance, and I did. So I'm very grateful for the tickets to go. It's just, you know, I'm not necessarily going to build up my Celine Dion library of songs now. And at the end, she did the fake out thing where it's like, okay, show's over. and the lights are still off, and then everybody does a standing ovation, and it's like, oh, no, no, thank you. Okay, encore performance. Because it's like, of course it's the encore performance, because she didn't do the song from Titanic. So then she comes back up.
That's yeah. The encore?
Yeah, because it's like, what a total fake out. I mean, what was funny, though, is that the lights are still off, so you could see the doors opening up, like the light coming in from the hallways and stuff as people were trying to leave. And I'm just like, you people are morons. Like, how are you leaving right now?
Like, yeah, until there's house lights and house music, it ain't over.
Mm-hmm. So she does the thing, but there's a platform that pushes her up off of the stage. And there's like CG caustics on the screens behind her. And then there's a fountain of water, which shoots down from the ceiling in a, makes like a little water tube around her. So she's not getting wet in the middle singing, but, it's like doing this whole like Bellagio thing all around her. And then, the platform comes down and she finishes the song. So it's a big, big deal.
Does she float out over the audience and throw fake diamond necklaces at people?
No, she does not do that.
Shame, I suppose. Missed opportunity, really.
So, how was your weekend?
That is a good question. I have no idea.
Did you? I thought I saw a photo.
Oh, that's right. I went to Sedona.
Yes, I'm trying to lead you to what you did that I don't really know that much about. But
it's
go on.
It's been nonstop. I have not stopped moving in a couple of weeks. It's been very busy with all of the various things. But we went to Sedona Friday night. Came back Saturday for more planning, wedding planning, doings and things. It was nice. There's finally a coffee shop up there that makes competent coffee, which is delightful.
Well, what's the name of it?
Creekside Coffee and something. Creekside Coffee and Bakery. It's across the street from the Tlaquepaque thing, which is
what's
a terrible name.
Tlaquepaque thing.
It's like this this thing that looks like an old Spanish mission, but it's just full of shops that sell stupid little trinkets that I don't know who buys them, but it's like a big shopping area. And they're opening they're expanding across the other side of the street to Tlaquepaque North.
Let's see.
I'm a little disappointed
that Creekside is not next to a creek.
Oh, it is next to a creek. It's next to Oak Creek. Oak Creek runs through the whole city.
Oh, okay. Well, why didn't you say that? Why would I care about a shopping plaza? Beautiful scenic creek like that. You got to mention it.
You could say it's next to the creek, and then it could be anywhere in like a 50-mile radius. But when you say next to Tlaquepaque, it pretty much nails it down.
Okay. It really cemented where it is for me.
Yeah, it's at the intersection of Oak Creek and Tlaquepaque North, if you're curious.
Okay. Is that the intersection of art and technology?
Sure. Yeah, it's on the northeast side of the intersection of art and technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I did that.
That sounds really exciting. Was it all about wedding planning?
We ate some food. We got the preview of the food.
Mm-hmm. Was it food like? Can you say without giving too much away?
It was food like.
Mm-hmm.
And then later after that, we went to another place that had food, much more expensive food, and then we ate some of that, and then drank some alcohol, and then we drank a lot more alcohol.
Yeah, I saw your photo in front of the yellow wall, and you seemed to.
I was hungover, is what it was.
Yeah, you seemed like you had a good night.
The thing about these destination cities that are full of old tourists is that they're all totally cool with the 10 a.m. checkout, and the 10 a.m. checkout should be banned across the board. Like, I don't know what to say, but when you've been up till 3 in the morning drinking heavily, and then, you know, you've got to deal with that, it's not a great morning.
No, I don't imagine that it is.
Although the temperature was in the mid-40s, so that was great.
It's
kind of like iced my headache while I was getting ready in the morning.
Oh, that's nice. We stayed at Vidara, and apparently they have a system where you can specify a later checkout time and pay a little extra for it. So we actually checked out at 6 o'clock. It was 55
p.m.
Yeah, 6 o'clock p.m. And it was $55 extra to do that instead of checking out at 10 p.m. at 10 a.m. So
I would opt for that literally every time I ever stay at a hotel.
Yeah.
Have you ever been like so tired or hungover at a hotel that you just book an extra night so you just don't have to like leave quickly?
I've never done that.
I have done that on numerous occasions.
No, usually Jason just tries to get a late checkout because he's not very good about packing and leaving to go like on to the next thing. It's not like there's a hangover situation or anything. It's just like just the stress of packing everything back up and then like leaving. It's just like he would just rather just check out like 2 hours later. And it's just like, but why? We're not doing anything else. It's like, let's just go. So I am impatient and I usually want to leave. And I always check what the checkout time is and he never bothers to ask. And they're like, do you have any questions on your checkout? And I'm like, when's our checkout? And he's like, nope, we're good. And I'm like, but checkout time. What is the checkout time?
Yeah. No, I generally like to sleep up until the very last moment. Again, especially when you're out all night drinking and what have you. I think we actually asked for a late checkout and they gave us like an extra 45 minutes or some crap, which is just, that's the worst. But yeah, man, I think it's been like New Year's Eve most of the instances, but you wake up and it's like 15 minutes, so you're supposed to check out and you just reach over, grab the phone, call the front desk, be like, we stay another night. And they're like, oh, sure. And then just hang back up and go back to bed for like 3 hours. In case you were wondering how I live my life.
It's a really good life hack.
Yeah. No, I mean, we haven't done that much lately. Just, you know, stay at home and be boring people on New Year's Eve. But, you know, when you're staying at a hotel New Year's Eve, that's usually what ends up happening.
Oh. I see. Yeah. Party animal.
I drink a lot of scotch. I think I drank like $60 worth of scotch at a bar.
Wow.
That's good. It's tasty.
That's a lot. I didn't. So that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't eventually end up go get a plastic skull drink down at Treasure Island?
No, I didn't. See, that stuff does not appeal to me in the slightest. And we have like a bottle of wine split amongst four people at dinner. So
you each got a shot glass of wine.
No, it's like two, it's like one and a half. Two glasses, depending on how it was poured. I don't exactly remember. I think it was like one and a half. So, you know, that was okay. But it was that was basically it. And then we bought some wine from the venue. No outside food or beverages, of course. And that was from some horrible, like, it was basically like $2 chuck that they charged you $13 for. And it came in a plastic cup and it was like some California wine, which means it just came from grapes from the Central Valley, which have no actual flavor, and they usually just put a bunch of sugar in it, and then that leaves you with like that sort of like hard to describe. You know what cheap balsamic vinegar tastes like? It's like that, and so you know you get that like sweet but sour but alcoholic kind of glass of plastic, and you're like this is gross, and you just have one,
high,
and you're
man.
Like I don't want another one.
Las Vegas is the pinnacle of classiness, isn't it?
Mm.
Did they at least put it in those little plastic glasses that are kind of shaped like a wine glass where it has a little removable bottom thing?
No, it was just like a clear solo cup.
Yeah, so like those little things that they put next to the water fountain thing at offices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not a fan generally of like the give me a 3-foot margarita with a giant green straw or whatever. But, it was one of our few traditions to go get a plastic skull drink at Treasure Island. It's like $16 for that. It's a relatively large mug and it's usually a very strong, terrible margarita, but, it was tradition. I got like one of like red, clear, blue. I think I might have a green one. I don't know if I still have them. I think I left at least two of them at Intel. I used to keep pens in them on my desk.
I saw the red one around your waist in that photo you sent me.
Yeah, I mean, when you're done drinking, you don't want to, like, just throw it out.
Yeah, you don't want to
walk
lose
around
your
with
head.
A backpack or anything. I don't want to lose my head. So I put my belt through the loop, and then you can put your coins in there or something, or all those little flyers people hand you while you're walking down the strip. You can put those in there, and just, you know, it's very handy.
Yeah, and then
store your compact flashcards in there.
You can put your pens and pencils in it, just like you said. Reduce, reuse, recycle. You can repurpose things. It's found art, really.
It's really about going green.
Yeah. Sustainable living is really at the heart of everything that this podcast stands for. So
yeah, you know what's not sustainable is drinking a very large, very strong margarita all the time. That's not a good thing to do. You do it like once a year when you're in Las Vegas. Because actually, I don't think I've been to. Oh, I guess I haven't been to Las Vegas for NAB in like 3 or 4 years. But I think I've been there within the past 1 or 2 years.
My advice to listeners is never ever order a house margarita. Ever. Under any circumstance, do not do that. Because they are, by far, the most disgusting thing. And you will feel terrible after drinking, like, one or two of them. So what you want instead is to order the more expensive ones, because they generally put just a little bit more effort and finesse into that, because they realize they're charging you more money. So I prefer that. I get like a nice top shelf Cadillac margarita if I can get it. And, you know, it's Cadillac. Well, so it's premium is really, it's right there in the name.
Yeah, sure. It's, you know, the Cadillac of margaritas.
The Cadillac of Cadillac margaritas.
The Cadillac of Cadillac margaritas. Mm-hmm. You know, to be clear, the Skull Drink margarita place is just to the right of where they used to do the pirate ships, which I hear they don't do anymore. There's an entrance right there. And on the outside of the building, there's like a little hut that has one of those like flappy windows that you close and lock like a mall kiosk. And in there, they've got like a big wooden sign that just says like margarita, $16, pina colada, $15. And you don't really get any choices. It's just, you know. Colorful Skull Drinks.
That's also a red flag. Did it come out of a swirling slushy machine?
Oh, absolutely. Just like 7-Eleven. Totally did. Came out of that, and then the guy just poured a bunch of tequila in it.
No, frozen margaritas are revolting. You want your margarita top shelf on the rocks, and I get mine without salt because that's how I order it. And then they always forget that, and they bring it to me with salt on it anyways.
Watch your sodium intake, huh?
Well, no, I don't need the extra. I just, having extra salt on it just doesn't do anything for me.
Do you send it back or wipe it off?
Oh no, I just usually just sip out of that one side the whole entire time.
You just say I'm fine, and you look down all sort of dejected for like 5 minutes.
Well, what are you gonna do? You gonna send it back and wait like 10 minutes for them to make another margarita, and they probably spit in it? They're like, no, thank you.
I mean, they wouldn't make another one. They would just wipe off the rim or pour it into another glass.
No, I'm fine. I just power through. But margaritas aren't even really like my favorite thing in the whole entire world. And by the way, next to Gilly's, I noticed there was a Senior Frog there. So that's how you know you're really staying at a classy establishment. Is you have Gilly's and you have Senior Frog, and then you've got the pirate ship and the Treasure Island logo.
Hmm. Yeah, I've never been in the Senior Frogs, so.
I hear only bad things about Senior Frog locations around the world.
Yeah, I don't hear anything, really. I mean, I've been to the Gillies a couple times, but it's just, it's terrible in there. I know a couple people who have tried to ride the bull. It's funny to watch. I've never done that.
Oh, well, there's... Oh, shoot, what is the name of it? Saddle Ranch?
Oh, yeah, there's a couple. You've got one there. We have one here as well.
I've been to the one on Sunset here.
I've been to that one too. That place is as close to Roadhouse as you're going to get in LA.
I found it unpleasant, and they have the mechanical bull thing in there, and they also have I can't remember what the name of it is, but if I did, I'd probably have to bleep it. But it's the blue punch thing that comes in the carafe. Don't order that.
Don't they also have that like tower of beer thing that comes in again, kind of like a water cooler thing, but it's like 3 or 4 feet tall and there's a big clear tube.
It's like a science beaker. I don't know. It doesn't, that again, does not appeal to me.
It's alcohol theater.
I really appreciate quality over quantity these days. So
the Saddle Ranch is a good place to go if you want to get, punched by a guy who has a Harley Davidson.
Did you get punched by a guy that has a Harley Davidson?
No, I've never. I was gonna say I've never been in a bar fight. I've been in one or two bar fights, but no, I've never been punched by somebody.
Oh, well, that was
a
very specific and strange thing for you to bring up. There wasn't a story attached to it.
No,
I was like,
just, you know,
did this happen?
Everyone there is a little keyed up, a little ready to fight, and you know, they all think they're bikers, even though they're just, you know, glorified frat boys drinking beer out of a big clear tube.
Fantastic. I guess it's not as good as a clear skull, but
no. I mean, trying to think where I put my skull. There used to be one, I think, in the closet here to my right, but I don't think it's up there anymore.
Big problems.
I'll mail you one if I find it.
Those little tag chip things, the tiles, and you should
tile. Yeah,
you should put one of those on it. You never lose your skull.
I'll see if I can find it. I'll mail you one.
No, please. I'm fine. I did buy two turquoise salt and pepper shakers that are ceramic French bulldogs from Target today.
Solid investment. That is a solid investment.
They were on sale for 5% off. So I have those now. I don't really use like table side salt and pepper shakers for anything because I'm a strong believer in properly seasoning my food as I cook it.
Of course you are.
But I just they were so small and turquoise and French bulldoggy, and so I bought them and I have them now. Those are mine.
Yeah.
But they're not, of course, as exciting as skull mugs, I suppose.
Yeah. Different purposes.
Yeah. I mean, another interesting thing happened this week in which I didn't have time before I left to go to Vegas to edit our episode we recorded with Todd. But then when I got back from Vegas, I edited it that Monday, and then I was very tired. But it went up, and it's 3 hours and 11 minutes.
Long episode. It was a good episode though. There are a lot of things. All of our guests bring something interesting, and Todd brought so much enthusiasm for the film and the material that it was thoroughly entertaining. I'm actually listening back to it, if you can imagine, because it's 3 hours and 11 minutes of fascinating information from the two of you, and I'm there too, kind of, mostly, sort of, defending my position, but it's a good episode. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Defend yourself. It came out good, I think, and Todd liked it, and I will be very happy if we get Todd back on in the future. I'm just gobsmacked still about the length of the episode because it's so long.
I told you after we finished recording that we were about 10 minutes away from the longest episode in comparable history. We were so close.
Yeah, I didn't need that. And that is another reason why when we were trying to figure out when I was all bleary-eyed yesterday morning after trying to figure out what to do for our episode we were recording this week, we had our conversation, and it was like, you know, maybe we don't need to watch anything.
No.
Since that was such a that one was chock full of facts and aspect ratios and pan and scan.
It was at least 2 weeks. Maybe 3 weeks worth of material for people to listen to.
Yeah, so people are going to be digesting that. So this is just a little tiny snack. Since you had such a big meal, it's just one of those short episodes that we do every now and then after we've had an incredibly long one, like the what was that Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
That was a pretty good one too.
That was another really long one. We like to talk sometimes, apparently. On occasion,
when there are things to talk about and there is an absolute ton of behind the scenes stuff because it's from 1982 and, you know, visual effects and all that stuff and Star Trek. Yeah, it goes on.
Yeah. And there's one of the things that I'm happy about, though, is that we got another little high plot point on the graph that. The German guy is doing is it Gemis 42?
I don't know how to pronounce it, but he's awesome.
Yes. He was doing all these comparisons, and he was like, wow, you guys, you know, defocused on the incomparable is like a lot. And it was just like, wow, that's true. Should probably shut up more. And then they did that comparison between incomparable and relay, and Cortex and Reconcilable Differences were ranked a little higher than us because they more consistently have longer episodes, and we do these short ones on occasion. So I was just a little annoyed because I know that our longer episodes are higher than that. So I was just like, so anyway, here's that episode, and I handed it back off to him. The runtime. And he plotted that out for us, so that was nice to see again.
Nice. Did that bring our average up or no?
No, he didn't send me the average one. He just sent me like a plot graph thing of what we had. They were just like little dots, and they it was big, it was long, it was strong, and we got our friction on. That's from that song. You like that song, don't you?
It's sure. It, uh-huh. It's totally 1993, and there's that song still out. When did the song actually come out? I want to say 92. Who knows? Anyway,
doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of podcasts, Becky, look at no. Anyway, what?
Ringtone. you know, I am so angry at iTunes because it consistently tells me that I can't sync ringtones because my phone is synced with another computer. I haven't had a new computer in 3 years, but apparently the iCloud Restore says that my phone is linked with some computer I don't own anymore. But I can't put ringtones on my phone because apparently the Mac is still the center of all of my media, even though we've got all these other cloud services. There's no way to get ringtones onto my phone other than syncing through iTunes, which would require that I erase and resync my phone, which I'm not going to do. But I have all these awesome ringtones that Boom made for me, and I can't put them on there. I've got all kinds of ringtones that I'm going to put on my phone, but nope, not going to happen, apparently.
Oh, you should just console yourself by making a soundboard app.
Yeah, I'll get right on that.
Yeah, actually. You should do that.
Yeah. Maybe we can repurpose the Volcano app. That's that infrastructure is already there. So
yeah, for listeners who are not familiar, there is a podcast called Bionic that ran for a while, and a fan of that show, John Voorhees, had written an application that played back little sound bites from the podcast, just based on randomly hitting things. So it was a rather entertaining application.
I still totally have it on my phone, by the way.
I still totally do, too, because I'm worried that John will delete it someday. But
I'm pretty sure he did.
He took it down, but I think he put it back up.
I'm gonna push the fire button, see what comes out. Oh, you got to turn the mute switch off. Sorry.
That doesn't sound very good for you behind, Michael.
Well, yeah, that was
a good one.
We gotta bleep the podcast now. So... Anyway,
because of copyright infringement.
That is an advertisement for a canceled podcast.
it's hardly an advertisement.
It was, you know, it's nice that people do these things and comparisons of things and stuff about talking. So I'm nice that we ranked so highly on a chart of people who talk too much.
Totally. Speaking of podcast related things, did you see that quote unquote IMDb for podcasts thing? It's called Podcat.
I've seen another one called like Podcaster Database or PodDB or something like that. But no, I haven't seen Podcat.
It's a new thing. It's going on. Basically, what it does is it just looks like it pulls in the RSS feed from iTunes, and you can listen to songs or episodes there just like you would off of our website. But I think the intent is that everything gets tagged, and then you can cross reference guests from different shows, and you can search for people as well as podcasts. So it seems interesting, but right now it's just in its infancy, and it's not much more than sort of like the iTunes podcast store.
Oh, okay. Well, that was a good story, Dan.
Yeah. It's breaking news in the world of podcasts, which, you know, we are nothing if not a news and timely show.
Yeah. So Rye in the chat room, since we have a chat room because this is occasionally recorded before a live studio audience of about two people. Rye in the chat room asked us to talk about the Letterboxd app. I have not used it, but that is also something that was released and is mm-hmm. about things.
Yeah, I totally downloaded it and mm-hmm. made an account. You can probably guess what my username is if you want to follow and stuff. But it's
Jolly Rancher 49.
It totally is Jolly Rancher 49. How did you know? Yeah, it's a nicely done app. That's the main reason I didn't sign up for Letterboxd in the first place, because I'm not going to use it on my computer. But I did like that it had when you first log in, it has a screen that basically says you want to go through like the list of most popular movies and say whether you've seen them and rate them with stars and tell us if you like them. And I think I went through like 700 movies in like a half hour or something and added them to my little profile dude. I haven't started writing like, reviews or anything like we normally do on the Plot app or whatever else. But yeah, it's a nice little system they got going on there. I think I'm going to use it more frequently.
Yeah. I kind of tapered off on using Plot. It was just kind of slow and a little buggy. I thought it was fine in most of its respects, but it just I didn't ever feel compelled to really open it.
It's a little slow, but the plot was a little more geared towards conversation and sort of like a little comment thread. I'm not sure Letterboxd is really built for that. It's more for like, you know, writing a diary or leaving reviews and adding star ratings for other people to see, but less about, you know, do you recommend this to your friends? Plot was a little more social media kind of thing, but yeah, you know, give Letterboxd a try. I still have them both on my home screen now, but it's exciting. It's always good to keep track of movies that you watch.
Cool.
Speaking of movies that you watch, boy, I sure would love to use my Letterboxd app on my phone from my couch to watch new movies, wouldn't you, Joe?
Is this a reference to the screening room?
Totally is. Oh, okay. It totally is.
Well, even if that was a product that was for sale right now, according to what their specification is, you would not be able to do that because that is a news item that is kind of, well, anyway, I'll say that I have a lot of suspicions about this, and I'll just explain the product in one sentence, and then you'll see why. And that is, it is a $150 box, which can only stream $50 one-time rentals from a company, a singular company. That's it. That's all it can do. And there's supposed to be new releases. Now, that is in theory a savings if you have several people over and you're watching something. It can also be a savings if you're the kind of people who go to the movie theaters and you buy like a truckload of Junior Mints and Cherry Ices. Like,
I don't buy a truckload. I buy the regular size Junior Mints and the small Icy usually.
Well, now you can just make your Cherry Ices at home.
No, see, there is nothing better than the actual theatrical experience when it comes to things like Cherry Ices.
So you're really taking Christopher Nolan's side in all of this, where he objects to the notion of having a screening room app for well, first-time releases.
To be fair, Christopher Nolan's point is James Cameron wrote a good email, and I agree with him.
it was James Cameron and Landau, his longtime producer, were objecting to the notion that the first-run experience that people should be exposed to is what they have in their homes. Now, that's debatable. I saw Avatar, and it looks like a video game, so might as well be on a home TV.
Did you see it in 3D?
No.
Well, there's a problem right there, man.
Because I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret that Dan already is aware of. I have worked on several stereoscopic projects. That is the fancy word for 3D. That is the highfalutin big city word for 3D. And so these stereoscopic projects have consisted of either native stereo, where you have everything shot on two plates, or you have stereo conversion projects where it's all shot on one plate and then they cut things out, paste it, and paint out where the parallax would be. And, you know, you do all that stuff. And the secret is, I have worked on these things because I was hired to do that, but I loathe 3D and stereo scopic stuff with every fiber of my being. I see no inherent value in the process, and it generally lends nothing to what you're observing.
How often do you watch stereo 3D stuff in a theatrical setting?
Well, when I would work on it, I would see it in a screening room quite often.
Well, how big is the screening room?
Well, the big one, I don't actually know the screen size, but it was about the size of a small movie theater. And then there were smaller screening rooms that they had throughout the building, which, you know, it's more like a nice home entertainment setup. But 3D, blah. And I've also seen stereo stuff in movie theaters and blah. It's just most of the time directors aren't thinking about stereo and how to compose for it. And even when they are, they place stuff at the wrong depth and do all kinds of wacky stuff that they shouldn't really do because you're not on a ride. You're sitting in a chair. So, that's one of those things where it's just like, no, I don't really see the inherent value in that. And if you look at something like Avatar in 2D and you're like, oh, you know, this doesn't feel like I'm immersed in this experience. It's like, well, maybe that's because everything's just kind of a plasticky, foresty thing with blue people running around that are all stretchy and weird. So, you know, that's a whole nother story. But, so I don't buy this argument that there is no way for you to appreciate something in your home, in the comfort of your own home, because people are doing that right now anyways, instead of going to theaters. there is a dearth of mid-budget films that are out in the world today, or and even smaller indie projects don't generally make it to wide theatrical release. So then you're left with just big giant tentpole blockbuster things that come out in the movie theater, and then your argument is basically saying, oh well, you have to go to a theater for those. And it's like, okay, well, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's fine, I guess. I mean, there is something impressive about seeing something on a very large, properly calibrated, projected, crystal clear screen, although sometimes projectionists are not doing their job very well, and you don't get that. But there's something enjoyable about that. Now, you can be in theaters where people are talking behind you, hitting your chair, making loud noises, going through potato chip bags. You can be next to somebody who's slurping. You can have somebody who has a very tall hairdo. You can in front of you. You can have like little children who are running around in the theater while the movie is playing. So in that sense, you're really bringing the living room to the theater. And I don't really enjoy that because it's not my living room. And it's not their living room, but we're all there together enjoying a communal living room. And I don't particularly enjoy that experience. But that's not why I think that screening room won't take off, because that is more to do with the financial realities of this, where you have to get all these studios on board. Then you have to convince people to spend the money on this product, but somehow grow it enough that the studios are still interested in doing this. Cause like, sure, maybe you can get like Warner Brothers or something on board, but how are you going to get like everyone, Disney, Paramount, Universal, everything?
Cause once they see how lucrative it is, they'll all jump on board.
But if it's not lucrative, because
I know,
you know, it's just like you, it's one of those problems with like video streaming services. If they don't have anything on it, then why would anyone use it? Like look at Sony's Crackle, for example. Do you know what it's full of? Sony stuff. Do you know what it's not full of? Other movies. Do you know what people generally don't want to see? Sony stuff, apparently. Because Crackle is on everything. No one talks about Crackle. Literally. Did you ever hear anybody talking about Crackle, Dan? You got your ear to the ground there in Arizona.
I enjoy Crackle for the express purpose of watching the, like, I binge watching the episodes of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee that I didn't realize were out yet, and then I turn it back off and forget about it until like 6 months from now. I go, oh yeah, I wonder if there's some new episodes of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and then I turn it on and I watch the three episodes in a row and then I'm done.
Yeah, imagine if you had a $150 box for watching Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Well, it's I would get a little bit more than like 16 minutes of enjoyment out of it at that point, because that, you know, movies are longer and whatnot, but you know, you're right, there is the incentive issue. But of course, I mean, that I don't know if that was like part of their plan, or if they talked about like, we could potentially kind of sort of, if you rent a first run movie on here, you would also get two tickets to go see it in the theater to try and convince you to go back to the theater and buy some expensive popcorn too, and support people.
Yeah, and also the theater owners are against this. The National Association of Theater Owners, hilariously NATO, but well, at least I find that funny. Sorry, it didn't amuse you, Dan. Why didn't you laugh? It's NATO.
I was holding the mute button. Yeah, no, they totally serve the same noble purpose as the actual NATO.
Yeah, so they are dead set against this, and Variety printed this thing where they're like, "Oh, it's such a big controversial thing. Like, there's a civil war brewing," and it's like, there isn't. Like, this is like a vaporware product by Sean Parker, and then like some people were like, yeah, that sounds kind of cool. And then some other people were like, no, I don't want that at all. And then the theater owners are like, no, thou shalt not decrease the limited run experience of our theaters, because that's the worst for us. And you know, they're generally against everything. Remember when the last time they were in the news was when the terrible Sony hack movie came out. The Seth Rogen and James Franco vehicle of destruction. That was something where the National Association of Theater Owners had pulled it out of all of the members, basically, had pulled it out of screenings. And then the Sony executives were trying to get it accelerated to release online. Why? I don't know. It's horrible. But they went through all the
trouble. It was a viral sensation, man.
Oh, God. And so they went through all that trouble. And then we turned right around, and the National Association of Theater Owners was objecting to it because you're reducing the run window. And it's like, but you weren't going to show it anyways, you bozos. So they just basically don't want anything ever to set the precedent that it can be released online day and date with stuff inside of theaters, because they know that people will opt for convenience over the horrible movie theater experience that they generally seem to have. And it's just the reality of the situation.
Well, I don't know about you, but our local movie theater is being revamped with nice electronic reclining seats. And they're putting in a bar, I believe, with alcohol, which will be a thing that'll totally get us to... No, it won't get me to come there. But, the supporters of this...
Are they going to have skull cups?
I didn't ask. I haven't been back.
They should have skull cups, and then you'll be there because you got to collect your skull cups.
You know, the skull cup is really more of an annual thing, which, you know, it's sort of a large event. But, you know, the, according to some folks, that's where this is going. So you're gonna watch day and date movies at home, and you're going to go to the theater only for serious large events, like you would go to a concert or to Broadway or something, as Mr. Spielberg has apparently predicted. I could see that analogy. People enjoy music in their home, but there is really nothing comparable in your home to going to an actual concert. Why wouldn't movies potentially end up in the same sort of way? I mean, it's not a live performance of the movie, but
Yeah, but see, here's the thing: is like, I don't disagree that eventually things will go that way, despite the NATO, despite NATO, and despite you know, whatever the studios might not be immediately on board, and despite whichever film directors are hoity-toity about their celluloids, there's no combination of things that doesn't eventually result in day and date releases happening at some point. It's just that it's a matter of when at this point, and delaying it for as long as possible is their motivation to get as many people to keep going to the movie theater as they can. Now, it's definitely, like I had mentioned, you know, it's gone down. Nobody's really turning out for like big social events. Like, it's not like kids on Fridays are like, oh, I gotta go to the movie theater. Nobody does that. I were kids. Remember when we were kids and you'd all go to the movie theater?
We would all go stand outside of the movie theater. No, we would go to the AMC Ahwatukee 24 because, you know, it was the place to be. But, I do enjoy the theater experience. It is a net positive for me, and I enjoy seeing movies in the theaters, but it's not a reasonable expectation. I mean, I'm tempted to go all suburbs and say that it's far away and stuff, but I think a lot of people are in that situation where it's hard to get to the theater. There's the hassle of all of it. And while I would love to spend more time at the theater watching, you know, every movie that comes out, it's just not a reasonable thing to do. You know, I wish the theater owners would kind of fight back with like a membership or whatever, like, you know, give us this much money per year and you can come see any movie you want whenever you feel like it. And then ideally, you know, the cost will sort of even out based on the people who use it frequently and the people who don't use it frequently, that it'll, you know, they'll make some money. But like, you know, do something to sort of break up the paradigm to get people in the seats other than just make Junior Mints cost $6 and put in a bar where I can buy a Bud Light, you know, because the only thing that would make the theater experience better is to make the sticky floor smell like piss beer.
Their AMC does have a program where they you get a membership and you can basically have a viewing. I think a movie has, I don't know the specifics, but it has to be like out in theaters or something for like 2 or 3 weeks or something before you can go see it. So basically like halfway to it being on home video. You can go do that if you want to with their membership. They don't have anything for like first run experiences.
Is that across the board or is that just in certain locations? Because I've never even heard of that.
I can't remember the name of the program, so I don't even know the details. I didn't even bother to sign up for this thing because I go to the movie theaters so seldom that it didn't make any particular sense for me. But expensive concessions are not really the appropriate concession to make to your audience because it's not an enjoyable experience overall if you're expending a ginormous amount of money Because it is ultimately an expense. And you are paying a pretty penny to go sit in a theater, and to maybe not enjoy your experience very much if you don't enjoy the environment around you. Like, I went to one of the revamped AMC theaters that's in Marina Del Rey. They have two there that are like across from each other. One is a dine-in one, and the other one's like in a strip mall. It's weird. It's an older, like, low incline one, but they put in new seats and the floor is somehow still sticky. And it just smells like the inside of a 7-Eleven. It's really gross, and I didn't enjoy it at all. And that's one of their new premium remodeled theaters. Now, and even going to like the Arclight, you're spending a huge amount of money. You get your fancy bar and whatever, but you're still buying like ridiculous hot dogs and ridiculous pretzels and stuff like that if you choose to partake. And then you go in and you sit and you watch in a movie theater with an experience that ultimately is not that different from what it was in the early 90s in terms of you go in and you take your seat and you watch your picture without much disruption, without the commercials running, etc. Because remember when it used to just be like some slides about like horrible movie trivia facts, and then you'd watch the same one like 50,000 times?
And then somebody would go to the bathroom and they would miss one, and then it would come back and would go through a second time and be like, oh, I think this is so-and-so. And you're like, wow, that was really good. You got the trivia. It's like, no, it's just on a loop because they only have like six trivia things.
You don't tell them that you're cheating, Dan.
No, I don't tell them. But like, you know, like half of them were like Will Smith or something, or like Julia Roberts. They're all really easy ones to guess.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But see, like that's the thing, is just like, how far has that premium experience really come? Not very. And you're just paying a lot for basically like what you used to have, only with assigned seating. That's the major perk that we've managed to pull out in the last decade, is that assigned seating has opened up to far more theaters than where it used to be available.
We don't have that here.
You don't what?
We don't have assigned seating. I'm sure there's probably like one or two movie theaters around here that do that, but no, the 90% majority in Arizona doesn't do assigned seating.
That is really bizarre.
Mm.
Almost everything in Los Angeles does it.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's more people there and stuff, but, and people are a little bit more particular.
Yeah. Oh, so without making any more sweeping generalizations about how terrible Arizona is,
it's pretty bad.
Let's move on. And just close out with like, I want eventual flexibility to watch some first run things at home, if I so choose, and to have the more luxurious experience set aside for other bigger things that I might elect to see. But I don't particularly think that this one product, which is not on the market, is really going to accomplish that, because I think that it's far too limited in what it does. It is it has a perceived expense for the amount of things that it can currently do. Now, maybe when it comes out to market, they will have changed things and you will no longer be required to have their box, that maybe it'll let you access it on an Apple TV or on an Amazon Fire Stick or like whatever. But I don't see that necessarily happening, because then you're taking a cut of whatever that ticket price is and giving it to Apple or to Amazon for those in-app purchases to do those rentals. So it's just like, what a crappy mess. Like, I just don't want that. Cause could you imagine like 30% of $50, if $50 is really their goal, then it's like, well, they'd have to charge more than $50 if they were going to do it on those platforms, but then they couldn't have their own box set off on the side and they'd have to do only this one thing. And it's just like, it's a total disaster of a product. Like, I just don't see it materializing. But then again, you know, it could maneuver to eventually find its way through some sort of software arrangement into being purchased or merged into a thing somewhere. But I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they say the future of TV and movies is apps, so maybe it'll be an app.
The future of TV and movies is not apps.
Well,
yes.
You know, there are some people who are on record who disagree, but anyway.
Well, he's wrong.
I'm leaning.
You hear me, Tim Cook? You're wrong. Not about the FBI stuff. Good job with that. Keep going. But about this movie theater stuff and about, you know, like people's home theater experiences and like watching things, then you should really like up your game, bro.
I'm sure they're working on it, but all these people are stubborn. But, you know, all things being equal, it's enjoyable to watch a movie on a giant screen with a loud thundering stereo system, whatever. But driving there and then the cost and then the people, it's difficult. But, what are you going to do? I'd be interested in the product. We'll see if it ever materializes. I'm on Spielberg's side, typically.
Yeah, but see, like, this is the thing. It's like, he's also backed a bunch of stuff that hasn't materialized anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, he gets a pass for all eternity because he's Steven Spielberg.
Okay, so you're going to give him a pass on Earth 2?
On what?
Earth 2. You never saw Earth 2?
No, I never did.
That was his space show. It was like a serious 90s Lost in Space where the Earth was all crowded and full of people. And so the ship went off and then found another planet that was like Earth. And then those people were on the planet. And there were these aliens who could swim through the Earth. It was weird. It's a very strange show.
Well, he's produced a lot of things. I guess if we narrow it to the things that he's actually directed, he's got a better track record.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you love skulls, and there is, of course, the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which takes us into our final topic. Another indie movie.
Oh, that's right. That's happening. I totally just... This is one of those news stories that I saw only through snarky replies on Twitter that I kind of had to assemble into... the actual story itself. So there's gonna be another Indiana Jones and Harrison Ford's on board, right?
Yeah. Here's the thing.
He's old and the last one was terrible?
Yes. And more than that, I have to say that if I were to evaluate the Indiana Jones output, like everything, if I were to just look at the whole thing in sum, I would say, you know, it's got one really good one. And then one very decent one that I enjoy, and then two that I don't like at all. So that's not really great, you know, 50-50.
Yeah, if you scope out my Letterboxd account, you'll see that the Indiana Jones films are not the highest rated ones in there. For me personally, they're great films, they're iconic, whatever. You know, they are what they are. They're part of the culture, but I don't hold a personal love for them the way some people do.
I mean, I love the construction and the cinematography and the blah 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 about Raiders of the Lost Ark, the first Indiana Jones movie, which is just called Indiana Jones before Dr. Drank gets on here and corrects me. But like that first one, good. And it's very well constructed, but I don't really like go and watch it all the time. I just appreciate it in an academic sense. And like, if it's on TV and I'm changing through channels in a Dan Sturm kind of a way, I might pause on it. But it's not the kind of thing where I'm seeking it out constantly, like, you know, Star Trek. I'm not going to do a 3-hour and 11-minute podcast about an Indiana Jones movie. Fortunately,
only because you don't know all the trivia and the making of stuff, of which there is probably an equal amount for Indiana Jones and the Star Trek movies, but.
Yeah, there's a ton for the Indiana Jones movies, tons of production information. But I don't have the same passion personally, like you, for the movies. Also, the second one is just horrible. It is so ridiculously bad.
Which one's the second one? I don't even know the order of them anymore.
Oh, that's the second one is weird because it actually takes place before the first one, which is peculiar. But that is Temple of Doom, where they have the whole thing with the insects and the wall thing and Short Round
and the stones and the Kali Ma and stuff.
Yeah, and Kate Capshaw just screams for like 30 minutes. Indy!
we've heard you do your Kate Capshaw impression a couple times on this show because, yes, you're not a fan.
It's blood curdling. I can't stand it. Oh, and as Rye points out in the chat room, there is a copious amount of racism in that film. And it's really weird. It's got a bunch of awkward racial moments about stuff and insensitivity. So it's not like well executed on any level, and I don't enjoy it at all. And it is followed up by Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, which is much more a return to the kind of thing that was in the first movie, where it's like the biblical stuff and Nazis, which is, of course, a thing that they chose to do. And for some reason, Harrison Ford has to go to Germany and, spoiler alert, shake hands with Hitler at a book burning.
He has to shake hands with him. He gets his autograph.
Yeah, that's right. That's just so I don't know why there was that's a bit of a stretch. But anyway, that I like Last Crusade overall. I find it enjoyable. It is not intellectually taxing, but it is fun to watch.
That's some high praise right there.
Yeah, but then you got Crystal Skull, which is just like filth, absolute horrible filth. I can find nothing positive to say about that film.
I mean, the movie was well made but what was so wrong with it?
Remember when they were on that truck, which was on all the screens, which aren't real, and there were
you're talking about the green screen sequence through the forest or whatever, the and monkeys, then, like, the cliff and stuff.
Yeah, CG monkeys and the CG ants.
That was poorly conceptually thought of. The implementation wasn't that bad. It was the ideas.
Anyway,
things.
My point is, Steven Spielberg does not always make masterpieces. So
yeah, but he's still Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
I mean, Jurassic Park gets him pretty far down the line in terms of giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Then he did Jurassic Park: Lost World. Did you see that,
yeah.
Dan?
Yeah,
do you remember? You remember that?
I was there. I mean, but what are you going to do? People demand a sequel. He's going to do the best he can. But
That was not the best anyone could do. That was, it's so bad.
He's not a writer. He's a director.
No, but I think that they did a better job, like, in terms of execution on Jurassic Park 3 than they did on the second Jurassic Park. Not in terms of story. The story is absurd in Jurassic Park 3. But the story in 2 is equally absurd, and the execution is poor. So it's just...
Two thumbs down.
Oh, man, so many thumbs down. It's just one of those things. It's just like, you know, he can do good things, but he can make some real stinkers. Like, and for some reason, we're all like, yay, Spielberg, yay, success, yay, Indiana Jones, yay, Harrison Ford. And I'm like, nope, far more skeptical about this stuff. Fool me 50 times, shame on you.
I don't think that's how that phrase goes.
I'm sure it isn't either, but I realized that after I said that. So it's too late. There's no going back now. We don't have the ability to edit this podcast. It's coming at you live.
It's literally set in stone. Somebody right now is carving it into a large rock in 3 different languages.
Yes, and then the tablet will be broken up and distributed around Venice. And where was the other one? I can't remember. Anyway,
is that the movie where Tom Hanks follows the line in the road and it goes back to the Louvre?
No, that was The Last Crusade, where the tablet and he had the rubbing, but it was incomplete.
Who got a rubbing?
God,
I know what you're talking about. I'm just screwing with you at this point.
Yeah. But anyway, I have no particular faith nor interest in the outcome of another Indiana Jones movie. So whatever it is, it's going to be. And if it's good, then I'm prepared to be as surprised as somebody who was surprised by a good Indiana Jones movie, I guess. But
I'm sure they'll get Shia LaBeouf back, and it'll be glorious.
No, he's not going to be involved at all.
He'll put that hat on. He's like not, he tried to do not, in the end of the other gonna, one.
He's not involved.
Is that because he's not allowed to leave his house? You know, like court orders and stuff. Or
I think he's still at that movie theater watching all of his work.
he's still watching the Transformers movies over and over again.
What he really wants is to have screening rooms so that he can watch his own movies at home. All of his first-run movies that are coming out in theaters.
That's right. He can hook that box up to his own little private screening room, and he can enjoy all of the Shia LaBeouf that he can handle.
What a sad, messed-up person that is.
Mm. One of my favorite stereo 3D theater experiences was Transformers. I believe it was 3, and there was a vertical misalignment in the stereo 3D projector, and it gave me such a headache. It was great. I was like, my head hurts at the end of this movie, and I took my glasses off and was watching the credits roll by, and they were off by at least like 6-8 inches. And I was like, yeah, there you go. So I filled out the AMC form on their website, which is apparently how you report those sorts of things.
I thought they had a customer service desk where you could demand your money back.
No. There's the customer service desk is manned by like some 14-year-old kid who just tears tickets.
Oh, so they wouldn't have been able to service you as a customer. So you had to escalate this situation to its utmost priority level.
Yeah, I'm not sure there are actually any adults working there at any point. If they are, they're hiding. But pretty much everyone there is a minor. They all have a little broom and a little dustpan, and then they can tear your tickets and tell you which side of the theater Theater 7 is on or whatever.
Well, then that's all the more reason to mess with them and have a big fiery demand.
I'm not in the habit of making teenagers cry.
No, I think it's far more likely that you didn't want to cause a problem and you didn't want to mention anything. Just like when you ordered that salad or a sandwich or whatever. Oh, it was a sandwich. You ordered the like Reuben or whatever when we were at the farm in downtown Los Angeles, and you didn't want to send it back for the soggy bread. And you're just like, it's not very good. Remember that?
I mean, soggy bread happens on a sandwich like that. If I send it back, I'm just going to get new soggy bread. Who cares?
Yeah, it was like a freshly made sandwich. How was it already soggy? It's so weird. The only answer to that, of course, is that it was sitting in the window waiting to be taken to the table for a very long time, and then it got soggy. But that is neither here nor there.
We made Cuban sandwiches for dinner tonight.
Where did you find Cuban bread?
I played the fifth.
do you want to tell me what horrible thing you substituted delicious Cuban bread for?
I will attempt to find out, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
You don't know what kind of bread you ate?
It came in the mail.
The bread came in the mail?
The bread came in the mail.
Why did the bread come in the mail? Was
this my food comes from the mail, remember?
Oh, this is from a company we're not going to mention for advertising purposes.
Yeah, they mail me food sometimes.
Uh-huh.
It is in quotes, 2 sandwich rolls.
That's not Cuban bread, Dan.
They show you how to use a pot in place of a panini press, how to squish the bread down in the pan to make it nice and thin and crispy.
Now that's not how you do it. It's so angry.
Worked pretty well, though. Worked pretty well. Let me send you a picture of the bread?
I thought you ate it.
Well, no, I mean,
you took a photo before you ate it?
No, I was gonna say my internet mail food comes with an app that shows you things.
Oh, so they have a picture of what your food should have looked like?
More or less, yeah. Yeah, here. I'll put it in the Slack, Dingus. That's not the button. It was good. It was a good sandwich. The pickles were a little more cucumbery than I typically prefer, but it worked well with the mustard and the cheese.
But you don't even is that a plantain?
Yeah. There was that's for the salad. There was a kale and plantain salad. It was kale and plantain salad.
Yes, a traditional Cuban kale and plantain salad.
Sure, of course.
Also, that bread looks like ciabatta or like a rustic, like pan rustique, as the French would say.
It was not quite as dense as ciabatta, but yes, kind of. I think I do have a picture of the actual thing on my plate that I ate.
Why is your phone at 10%?
Because I use my phone.
No, but it should be in low power mode. Like it should be like the little red bar.
I don't turn on low power mode.
Oh, low power mode is the best, Dan.
What, am I an animal? No. I need my notifications.
No. You still have your notifications, Dan. It doesn't turn off your notifications. Anyway.
I turned it on one time for like 5 seconds.
And then you got really awkward about it because you're like, oh no, what if it's turning off too much stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. okay. So that looks like pork tenderloin.
Yeah. It was
it's not the appropriate pork cut. I mean, I don't want to go all like John Syracuse on you about like what is and well, is not pizza, but
it's quote unquote pork roast. It was a very large puck of pork, as I referred to it.
That's definitely not the right consistency for the pork that you want on that sandwich. But like, I just my fear is that you're gonna get this into your mind, like this is what a Cuban sandwich is.
And I've had
like
Cuban sandwiches before. I know this is not a canonical Cuban sandwich. You know, I shouldn't even open my mouth because I knew this was going to be the reaction.
Well, of course you did, because we had that episode about Chef in which I railed on and on and on about the flimsy do whatever it is-ness about some people and Cuban sandwiches and how it needs to be the authenticity of what a Cuban sandwich is. And there's Miami style and Tampa style, and Tampa style has salami and Miami style does not.
I was wondering what the differences were. So that's a good point.
I've explained them to you before. Did you forget?
Yeah, I did forget.
Because, I mean, it's only been like a year, Dan. And it's really vital information for your everyday life to know exactly what the difference between a Miami and a Tampa Cuban sandwich is, because that will come up so often for you in Hawtuki.
It'll come up all the time when
What if somebody mails you something again? And what if next time it has salami in it? Are you going to know that it is a Tampa Cuban sandwich? Of course, it won't be, because it'll come with some horrible kale and plantain salad next to it.
Don't call it horrible. That was a delicious kale and plantain salad.
Oh, so you like kale now?
After all the
crap you gave me about liking kale?
I give you crap because it's funny. Yesterday I had a kale and garlic dip of some sort. It was very green. It was delicious. I enjoy kale. I eat kale. It's delicious.
Okay. Well, I like kale too. So I'm glad that's settled.
I'm glad we settled that argument.
Man. 89 episodes, and we finally got to the bottom of kale. So it's really vital information for the listeners that we have a point where we agree.
Sure. Everyone in the chat is really angry that they can't see my pictures, but I can't turn on Dropbox as we're talking.
Well, they'll just have to wait for these salivating photos of food.
It was a good sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you don't call it a Cuban or whatever, but it was tasty.
Okay. I'm glad you enjoyed your pork sandwich.
I did. What did you have for dinner?
I had refried black bean and cheese soft tacos. Which is not really a thing, because technically that would have been like enchiladas or something. But anyway, I was lazy and I just put them in the tortilla and didn't really like put them rolled into the thing and then bake them. So I just had them in the tortilla.
Are you a fan of fresh tortilla? No, I'm not. I can't even do that right now. Never mind. That's it's a conversation for a later time.
Mm-hmm. They were corn tortillas though.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the way you got to roll.
You want to wrap this podcast up in a tortilla? Or you got anything else to say?
Yeah, I think we can fold it.
You gotta know when to fold it. Know when to eat the tortilla.
Mm-hmm.
It's a song from that guy.
Yeah.
All right, that's all I got. Let's stop now.
The end.